Nandini Patwardhan grew up in Mumbai, India, and has lived in the United States for the last several decades. She has a graduate degree in mathematics from the acclaimed Indian Institute of Technology and pursued a career in software development where she worked on platforms ranging from mainframes to the internet. Patwardhan is the author of Radical Spirits, India's First Woman Doctor and Her American Champions. Her personal essays have been published in, among others, The New York Times, Slate, Alternet, Talking Writing, The Hindu, Muttha Magazine, and India Currents. So what turned this self-described techie math nerd to a biographer and writer and go on to receive the 2020 Bay Area Journalism Award from the San Francisco Press Club? Well, let's find out. Welcome, Nandini.
Thank you, Suhag. It's lovely to be here.
So tell me a little bit about your journey from math nerd to writer. Was writing something that you enjoyed when you were young, but maybe set it aside because, you know, I think our families tend to say, do the practical thing, join STEM, or was it something that you picked up later in life?
It is definitely something that I picked up later in life, until about 2002, when my children were in the 10 to 14 age range. I started thinking that I should write some personal essays, recording my experiences as a essentially an Indian mother raising what are essentially American children. And there were a lot of opportunities for me to learn and grow. And so I wanted to write about that. And before then, I had only written letters home. I had never really written anything. I was an avid reader, but I had never thought about writing. So the writing started through personal essays. And gradually it just took on a life of its own because I realized that in the process of writing, my thinking was getting clearer. Okay. I was developing a deeper understanding of my own motivations and whatever influences I had had, which made me the person that I am. So it was more about learning how to be in the process of writing.
Okay. So you've said, and maybe what you've started telling us kind of gives us a hint into what you mean by this, but I wanted you to dig a little bit deeper. But you said that over the years, you've discovered that what you write on a given day becomes a letter from your current self to your future self. And I loved that. But tell me a little bit more about what you mean about with that sentence.
So, for example, the first essay that I ever wrote was about my daughter was about 13 at the time. And she was very much aware of brand names.
Okay.
Because in the middle school culture of the 1990s, that was the thing. Which store did you buy your clothes at?
I remember those days.
And this was completely alien to me. When I was her age, growing up in Mumbai, I had no idea about brands.
Right.
And here she was wanting to spend money, which again, I was, you know, growing up when and where I think by American standards, I would be very frugal. So I was trying to understand that. And it ended up becoming about a 1200 word essay.
Okay.
And now when I look back on it and read that essay, puts me in touch with not just my formative years, but my daughter's formative years and my formation as a mother. So it's a letter from the person that I was then to the person that I am today.
And this has
happened again and again in pretty much everything that I've written.
Well, it's funny that you bring up brands because I still remember, when I was a teenager in the late 80s and surrounded by friends who were wearing Esprit or Jordache jeans. And I remember coming home and telling my mother that, you know, I don't want to just buy a t-shirt at Mervyn's. Can we go, you know, to the mall and buy a t-shirt, an Esprit t-shirt? And my mom just was so perplexed. She's looking at a t-shirt at Mervyn's that was maybe like $5, $6. And then simply because this t-shirt said Esprit across it, at the mall, it was $25. So that doesn't seem like a big deal now, but she just couldn't wrap her head around it. I think she could have benefited. Maybe both of us could have benefited from that essay. But it is some of these kind of smaller things in the immigrant experience. And maybe it doesn't even have to be the immigrant experience, but just kind of navigating changing society and how, you know, different generations deal with that. So I want to kind of move into your book specifically. I know that International Women's Day, which needs to be way more than just a day, just passed, you know, earlier this month. And so I want to talk about your book. I live here in Philadelphia, where the subject of your first book, Radical Spirits, India's First Woman Doctor and Her American Champions, Anandibai Joshi, came to pursue her education. So for our listeners who may not be familiar, Anandibai was the first Indian woman to study medicine and earn a medical degree from an American college. She left India in April 1883 and came to the United States. And in just 4 short years, she achieved fame as a historical first. Tragically, her career was short-lived when she died in February 1887 at the tender age of 21. So first, what inspired you to learn more about her? And when you started, was it with the intention of writing a book, or was it kind of a typical rabbit hole exercise without necessarily an end goal?
Yes. So looking back, I feel that it was serendipity that brought me to this story. Mm-hmm. I was living in New England in a small town in Connecticut, and there is a used bookstore in downtown. Mm-hmm. So walking by, and I came across the biography of the Indian mathematician Ramanujan.
Oh, okay.
And I, having majored in mathematics, I of course had heard of Ramanujan, but I had heard a tiny story about him and his mentor discussing some mathematical oddity. Anyway, I picked up the book and I started reading it, and I was completely captivated. The reason I was captivated is that the author had done such a wonderful job of capturing Ramanujan's formative years in southern India, and what motivated him, and his long, hard struggle to find someone who would recognize this talent and this passion that he had for mathematics. But also, the author had also done a fantastic job of explaining the backstory and the motivations of his of Ramanujan's mentor, who was Professor Hardy. And interestingly, it is all written so well that I found echoes of my own formative experiences in both the stories, not just in Ramanujan's story, but also in Professor Hardy's story. And I was completely just enthralled by it. I enjoyed every page of that book. So much so that I looked up the author, and he was teaching at MIT at the time. I emailed him and I said, this is why I loved your book. It's just completely exceptional for so many reasons. And at the last, in the last paragraph, as I was closing, I said, there is another person about whom a similar story can be written, should be written. And that is Dr. Anandibai Joshi. And I sent off the email message. Of course, he had moved on to other projects and he was not at all inclined to start looking into Anandibai Joshi's story just because I suggested it. So, but the interesting thing is that I hadn't thought of her in 40 years at that time. The last time I had ever even thought of her or heard her name. Thought of her is too strong of a word. I had heard her name when I was about 10 years old growing up in Mumbai. And after that, there had been no reason to think of her because there was nothing around me that brought up her name. So a few months after this, and this was around 2010, the internet was a thing. The first thing we always did was go on to Google. So I looked up her Wikipedia page, but at that time, now almost over 12 years ago, there wasn't much information even on the Wikipedia page.
Right.
But a few months later, I was randomly browsing the internet and I came across an amazing ebook, which is called Leelavati's Daughters.
Okay.
And it's a collection of first person essays written by science and technology professionals, Indian women.
Oh,
Indian
okay.
women who are science and technology professionals. But the first chapter in this little ebook was written about Anandibai Joshi by someone else.
Okay.
Because it's like she's one of the earliest Indian scientific women who is engaged in a pursuit of science.
Right.
And in that profile, it mentioned that her ashes are buried in a cemetery in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Not far from where you are.
Yes, not right. Yeah. But this just electrified me because
right.
it suggested that there was some extraordinary relationship between Anandibai and the family in whose plot her ashes are buried.
Right.
Now, as you know, Indians don't bury the dead. Hindus don't bury the dead.
Right, right.
The Hindus cremate the body and then the ashes are distributed to a nearby body of water or something like that.
Exactly.
So my mind was just buzzing with questions. Why were the ashes sent back to the US? Who sent her ashes? Because she passed away in India.
Right.
Who brought them? Because we are talking about the 1880s.
Exactly.
How did the ashes get here? Why in the plot of this family? What is the connection with this family? And I only wanted to get the answers to these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my motivations was that by this time I had been living in the US for almost 30 years. And I had formed very meaningful, close friendships and relationships with Americans among whom I was living.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that there had to be something exceptional in this bond between Anandibai Joshi and this family. And I just wanted to investigate that. That's how it began. And then the rabbit hole, as you said.
Right. So, you know, you write with such vivid detail about where she lived. As I'm reading it, I can kind of draw images as I'm you know, the pictures are kind of coming into my head as I'm reading the book. And, you know, so that's where she lived, the places she saw, the places she traveled, her interactions with various people in her life, whether it's her father, Ganpat Rao, her husband, Gopal Joshi, or her sponsor and soon to be close confidant, this member of this family that you mentioned, Theodosia Carpenter. How did you research all these places? Did you visit them, or is it also just your imagination coming through to kind of build out the external details of maybe what information is available? I mean, how much information was available? How much did you have to take maybe writer's privilege with?
I have not taken writer's privilege at all.
Okay.
I mean, I through my process of writing personal essays, I became very much interested in nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to write a hagiography where, you know, we are saying, here is this great person, here is this great person. No, I wanted to show rather than tell. And so it took me almost 10 years to complete all the research and writing. Mm. Of course, I was working full time at the time. But the reason it took that long is that I was researching and going down to the source, to the primary sources as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I started thinking that I want to research this some more, I actually contacted Robert Cannigal, who is the author of the Ramanujan biography.
Mm.
And I said, this is what I want to do. Where should I begin? I have no idea where to begin.
Right.
He said, and he emailed me back and he said, you can only start with what you have in your hands.
Mm. Oh, I love that.
And so he said, so that told me that all I have right now is the fact that the ashes are buried in Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the Poughkeepsie Rural Cemetery, as it is called, has a website.
And
on the website, they have a walking tour and they have a listing of all the well-known people who are buried there. It's quite a who's who of the 19th century.
Hmm.
And so I contacted them. I said, this is the research I'm doing. I would like to come by and see what information you have.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately responded and said, you come over and we'll tell you what we have and we'll give you what we have. So I went over one day and they gave me a map of the cemetery so I could walk down the walking path and actually go to the cemetery where Anandi Bai's and Theodosia's headstones are.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me the name and address of a member of Theodosia Carpenter's family.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And they said, this person has told us that we can give their information to anybody who comes asking about Anandi Bai Joshi.
Wow.
So I contacted them and they invited me to visit them. This was in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So I traveled from Connecticut to Virginia.
Okay.
And they gave me copies of about 50 letters that they had. Letters that Anandi Bai had written to Theodosia. There were more of those letters than what Theodosia Carpenter wrote to Anandi.
Hmm.
So the first thing I did after I came back is I scanned all the letters so that now I have JPEGs of every letter.
Right.
And then I transcribed them. I typed them up by hand.
Wow.
And the reason I did that is that I didn't want to, because sometimes it's hard to read when it's a handwritten copy of a copy of a copy.
Right.
So I typed it all up. And in the process, it was like a mind-blowing experience. The closeness of the two women, the frankness,
right,
the boldness were just astounding.
Wow.
So that's where I began. But the other thing is that by 2010, 2015, that time frame, Google Books had become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Google Books is where Google created this machine, essentially, which scanned all the out-of-copyright books that are held in major university libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And then they converted the digital images to text. And then they made the text searchable.
Right.
So I would search these online databases, magazines, newspapers, books, and I found amazing amount of information about Anandi Bai and about the people who came to know her.
Mm-hmm.
Through these primary sources, things that were published back in the 19th century. And the people had obviously no idea that 120 years later, people
right.
would be reading what they were reading.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's how it happened.
That's amazing. And, you know, I'm avoiding giving too many spoilers of the books because because I want people to read the book. But let me ask you this. At the beginning of your book, I love the comparisons that you make between your own experience as an Indian woman in America and hers. So can you share some of those experiences or some of those kind of comparisons? Because, you know, you're talking, like you said, about 100 to 120 years apart.
Right.
What are the things that are similar? What are some of the things that were different?
I think things were more different than they were similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, she was the first person from India that people were meeting here in the U.S. By the time I came in the 1980s to the U.S., Indians were not quite as much of an unknown quantity as she was.
Right.
More importantly, the country that she came to was a predominantly white and predominantly Christian country. And it was a country that was kind of, I think, riding high. This was immediately after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Prosperity was coming to the country. And so there was a tendency to be a little unimpressed. By people from unknown lands.
Right.
Or there were some preconceived ideas that may not have been accurate. So in contrast, I did not face any of those things. So people were, by and large, not approaching me with suspicion. Even though I came, compared to now, 40 years ago, the United States was a much more white and a much more Christian country. Having gone through the upheavals of the 60s and the 70s, there was much more openness to the Hindu philosophy, yoga, vegetarianism, and things like that.
Right.
And so my experience was very, very different from hers. I came at an older age than when she did also.
Right, right. So, I mean, she was, she must have been.
She was 18 when she came.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what were some of the challenges that Anandi Bai faced as a woman, as an Indian, and as a Hindu that just really touched you in a way and inspired you in terms of how she was able to deal with them? Sometimes you deal with things, but you don't necessarily overcome them. Like, maybe give us one or two examples of those challenges. I mean, it's funny when I think of like the 1800s, because we only see things that are in black and white.
Yeah.
Even my memories, if I try to imagine it, isn't black and white. So I can't imagine. What were some of those challenges that you found most inspiring? Yeah.
So the first challenge that comes to mind is her difficulty of finding vegetarian food.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, I'm a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, most places don't have very many vegetarian options.
Right.
At the same time, we have the benefit of refrigeration. We have the benefit of global transfer of merchandise. So we have many more options today than she did at that time.
Right.
And so there is one letter that brought me to tears.
Mm-hmm.
Because she said, writing to her aunt, Theodosia Carpenter, "I'm hungry. I'm waiting for my food to be ready so that I can eat."
Wow.
And that was just so... so agonizing to think that this person was literally dealing with hunger. You know, we often say, "I'm hungry, I'm hangry."
Right.
And it is often metaphorical.
Right, right.
But in this case, it was no exaggeration. So that was certainly a big challenge for her. Another challenge for her, I think, was that most places where she met people, people started out from a position of being skeptical, not necessarily prejudiced, but certainly skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
So in the diary of a woman named Caroline Dahl, who was the first biographer of Anandi Bai, in the letters of even Theodosia Carpenter and some other newspaper accounts, I came across this, that we saw this tiny woman, brown skinned.
Right.
And we didn't know what to expect from her. You know, what is she going to do? What is she going to be capable of?
Right.
So she always knew that she was not only that she was on her own, but that she was, it was, the onus was on her.
Right.
To make a case for herself.
Mm-hmm.
But the amazing thing is that again and again, I also read, and all of these accounts are in the book, where one meeting, one afternoon, one salon, and people were 180 degree, completely turned around to the point that they became her champions.
Wow.
Because she spoke English fluently and she made a case for herself why she was here, why educating women is important, and why medical education in particular was so important for her to pursue, that her country women were suffering from lack of access to medical care. And people saw her courage, her ambition, not personal ambition, but the ambition of bringing a better way of life for the women of her country.
Right, right.
So that was a huge challenge as well.
Hmm. In your research, you know, you had mentioned that you had heard of Anandi Bai Joshi when you were younger. I'm assuming, like most things, it was maybe a paragraph at best.
Yes, 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 exactly.
And you even kind of outline, like, this was her, she was married, this happened, and, you know, end of story.
And that's it.
So in as you're reading through all these letters, other biographies, articles, what was something that was just most surprising to you about Anandi Bai?
The most surprising to me was so I described how I got my hands on the letters that she wrote from India to the United States, and then a few shorter letters once she was already in the US. Later on, I found a book that was published in Pune, India.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a compilation of the letters that she wrote from the United States to India, to her husband and to other people that she knew there.
Mm.
And there is the letters that she wrote back to India were more forthright in some ways.
Okay.
In some cases, she criticized Americans for their super confidence in their own culture.
Okay.
For example, and this will be of particular interest to listeners of this podcast, she said they think that they came up with the theory of evolution. But we had Dashavatar.
Interesting, yes.
In Hindu philosophy, what is it except the theory of evolution?
Mm.
And she has written this in Marathi to her husband in India.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. On another letter in which she described how Americans were being kind to her and taking care of her. And she said, I've come to realize that they are treating me so well, not because I am good and worthy, but because they are.
Wow.
So that gives us a measure of, you know, her wide-ranging emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. and her ability to understand deeply the pros and cons of everything that she was experiencing, or the pluses and minuses of everything that she was experiencing.
Wow. It almost sounds like a contemporary conversation.
Yes.
Except that now I feel that these conversations around race, religion, or, you know, differences has become so polarized.
Yes.
And she's being quite forthright. And I would imagine, I know you write about a lot of other issues as well in your essays and in blogs, where you're talking about, your own experiences as an ethnic minority in this country. What lessons are there to be learned from how she was navigating, a starkly different culture, and in a very different time where, this is predates laws that have brought, or at least sought to bring equality,
right.
equal rights to all Americans, regardless of their background. What can we learn from her that we can apply today in some of these very difficult conversations that should be happening, but aren't happening?
There are two takeaways that I have. One is that we have to have clarity about our purpose, our goals, and our values.
Mm.
If we have clarity and confidence in our own goals and purpose and values, then we are much less likely to feel challenged or discouraged when either other people or the situations become difficult to face.
Mm-hmm.
And a corollary of that in my mind is that if we meet a person who, let's say, has some preconceived notions about us based on the color of our skin, our religion, or the history in India, which has nothing to do with those of us who are living here.
Right.
Instead of castigating that person and blaming that person, we have to look upon it as an opportunity to advocate for ourselves in an open and thoughtful way.
Right.
Because if we are going to get people to see who we really are, how we see ourselves, we want to have some confluence between how we see ourselves and how the people among whom we live see us. And if we want to have that kind of confluence, every interaction is an opportunity to make a statement about who we are, so that over time they can be convinced, even if they are not convinced in one interaction or in one conversation, at least they are, their minds are becoming a little open. By and large, people are just trying to get through their days. They're right. not waking up in the morning and saying, yes, today I'm going to make someone's life miserable.
Right.
I read that into people's misguided or ignorant words and actions.
Right, right. No, and
I think that's how she lived her life day to day.
Right, right. Where, you know, she knows in so many of the interactions, this person has these ideas. And it sounds like fact that she was able to turn them around is exactly the process that you described that can be used today.
That can be used today. And if she could accomplish that in a time when the obstacles were far greater, when there was far greater ignorance in American society about India, mm-hmm. then certainly in this day and age, we ought to be able to do that as well.
Right, right. So I really want to encourage our listeners to get Radical Spirits, India's First Woman Doctor and Her American Champions. It's really a beautiful read. I really enjoy your writing style and all of that. What else are you working on these days and where can people read your work?
I have a blog on Medium, on medium.com. It's medium.com/Nandini Writer. So there, I published some of my writing there. I published quite a number of essays on a Substack called Free Black Thought. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of heterodox website. Where there's a lot of discussion about all the current things that people are talking about regarding race and affirmative action, and the book on caste by Isabel Wilkerson. I've written a review there. I've written a review of some of my volunteer work working with disadvantaged communities. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your journey in discovering the life in very great detail of Anandi Bai Joshi. And we look forward to having you on again to discuss other topics like race relations and some spicy topics of contemporary times. But with that, thank you so much. Namaste.
Thank you, Suhag. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, that's it for this episode of That's So Hindu. If you enjoyed it, please take a minute and leave us a nice 5-star review. It's how you can help the show get discovered by more listeners. You can help ensure that more of these get made by making a donation to HAF at hinduamerican.org/donate. Thanks again for listening.